Shalom. Welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 123 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch with us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us at genesis123.co or follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay tuned until the end, where as always, we offer you an exciting opportunity, and please feel free to share this with others who will also find it of interest. Today, I have to say, in preparing for this conversation, I came across the profound feeling that it's one of the most important conversations since we've been hosting this podcast for nearly 4 years now. It's not just because of the substance of the topic that we're going to get into, because of our guest and what she represents. With this, we're also launching a new series, and I'm not sure that Aaron knows about this, highlighting people all around the world who are not Jewish and who have stood with Israel and the Jewish people, especially since October 7th, 2023, and the Hamas attack and massacre, and who have done so at great personal cost, whether impacting and putting risk and their livelihood or even their lives. Accordingly, these are people who deserve our tremendous thanks and also are and should be role models to the world. Using an historic example from the Holocaust, we're calling this and them modern righteous Gentiles. Erin Mullen is an award-winning Australian TV and radio presenter. She hosts 69X Minutes, a hard-hitting news program that reaches millions on X, formerly Twitter, each week. She also reaches millions via her own YouTube channel, covering international politics, current affairs, defense, national security, and on her X and Instagram accounts. Previously, she hosted her own primetime show, Erin, on Sky News, from which, unfortunately, she was fired in December of 24, but things have come out pretty well, and we'll talk about that too. And she was also a columnist for the Daily Telegraph and Stellar magazine. Erin's early career was spending over a decade as a sports and news presenter as the first woman in Australia to serve as a host for a major sports broadcasting. Her personal experience with online abuse and harassment led her probably to be prepared for where she is in life today, but also to advocate for a new law to protect Australians online. It's known as the Online Safety Act, but also known by Prime Minister Scott Morrison as Erin's Law, which was passed in 2021. Erin travels widely, sharing her stories of persistence, resilience, failure, and always fronting up regardless of what's thrown her way, plus ensuring that negative experiences become a catalyst for positive change, always with a laugh and a smile along the way. Erin considers inspiring and empowering the next generation of Australians as both a privilege and a responsibility, and I think, as a modern righteous Gentile, that she's an inspiration for young people worldwide. Immediately following the October 7th massacre, Erin began speaking out in a clear, loud, principled and constant voice in support of Israel and against Hamas and terror in general. She's done so at great personal cost, but at the same time, her principled standing with Israel has also been a source of blessings, and we'll discuss these. Erin, I have to admit, we were just talking a little bit before beginning the recording. It's a little intimidating for me to host someone like you, not only who hosts your own programs and writes your own content, and I hope that I measure up to what you deserve in telling your story. And I thank you for making your time today, and welcome to Inspiration from Zion.
Jonathan, thank you so much for that incredibly generous introduction, and you delivered it superbly. And can I also please give you credit on the fact that whilst you've gone through a whole list of amazing things that I can do, turning my laptop onto Do Not Disturb is not a strength of mine, clearly. You did not skip a beat as my beautiful little brother tried to FaceTime me to say happy birthday to my 7-year-old. So that, as a television professional, if you can do that and not skip a beat, you're a pro. So well done to you. Thank you so much.
I thank you.
I'm really grateful to all the work that you do, and I'm so sorry that my voice is needed. It should not be needed. What I say and what I stand for should be mainstream and should be very common. The fact that it's not is a very sad indictment on where the world is at, but it is an honor and a privilege to stand with you and your people, and I say that very sincerely. So thank you for having me.
Agreed. But you know what, Erin, with your voice, let's revisit this in a year or two or five, when your voice has had that even broader impact, and maybe, please God, it won't be as needed. But right now you are needed, and you are that inspiration. And this is the first time that we're launching the Modern Righteous Gentile. And I'm really honored to, if I may, on behalf of the Genesis 123 Foundation, bestow that on you.
Oh, that is such an incredible honor. And it makes me feel so emotional. And wow. I feel like I was very naive prior to October 7, and people would stop me in the street after my beautiful dad died a couple of years ago, and they would say, thank you to your dad for being such an incredible ally of our Jewish community here in Australia and our Israeli community. And I would say thank you, and that's so lovely, and he cared deeply, but I would walk away and think, why would you need an ally? You know, I didn't quite understand. I understood what your people had gone through in the past, but not for a second would I ever have envisaged that we would be in the position we're in today, or that the level of anti-Semitism and hate would have existed, not even deeply under the surface, but quite shallowly, clearly. So to think in some way, shape or form that my voice has provided a little bit of comfort, and hopefully more importantly, has helped show others who are not Jewish and not Israeli the truth behind what is occurring, that is an immense privilege, and thank you. It means a lot.
So what was the, let's jump in at Erin. October 7th is not quite 2 years ago. We're 20 or so months into this war since the massacre and all of the horrible things that are intertwined with it. Just yesterday, had to run to the bomb shelter again after another Houthi missile from Yemen, and learning about the Iranians today ordering supplies from China to produce another 800 ballistic missiles. What triggered you? What was the catalyst after October 7th that compelled you to take the public stance that you have so bravely?
I had no choice, Jonathan. And to be honest, it wasn't even for a second. There was no period of me sitting down and maybe doing a pros and cons of speaking out. If you had said to me 18 months ago, or just prior to October 7th, there will be a terrorist attack like October 7, there will be people slaughtered the way in which they were. You will come out publicly, Erin, in defense staunchly of the innocent victims, and you will condemn vehemently those who carried out this attack, and it will be considered controversial, and you'll be in the minority. I would have said you were dreaming. It was not for a second did I think that there would be backlash to me calling out brutal, sadistic, murderous terrorists and standing with the innocent victims, which included children, women, burnt alive. Not for a second. But day one, the reaction was something I could never, ever have predicted, that I did not understand even a tiny bit. But 7 days later in my weekly show, I came back on air and I went harder in exactly the same way. And I think for me, I have to go to bed with myself, even though I do still sleep with my 7-year-old daughter, God bless her. I have to go to bed with myself and be okay with who I am and what I stand for. And not a day has passed that I do not read something I disagree with, that I do not look at propaganda, that I do not test myself to make sure that I am not in an echo chamber. Every night I go to bed without a skerrick of doubt in my mind that I am on the right side of history, that I am doing what is right for my daughter's future, for your future. I knew straight away that this terrorist attack was not just an issue for Israel or for the Jewish people. This represents an ideology and a hate that wants to destroy everything that I love: democracy, peace, freedom, hope, life. I was smart enough to ascertain very early that the threat here was not just directed at our Jewish and our Israeli friends. And so I selfishly, in some ways, jumped on this fight for my daughter, for the people I love, for all people, for Muslim children who suffer the most at the hands of this extremist ideology and this terrorism. It was never a choice. I could never not do what I'm doing now, and I could never be quieter, and I could never. It would be easier, yes, for me to not speak every day of the week, but I pick my heart. It's harder now to speak. Yes, it's harder on my daughter. It's harder on our existence here. There are a lot of things that come with speaking publicly in this space that worry me significantly. But what worries me more is people like me not speaking, the kind of world she will grow up in, the world she will live in 5 years, because this threat is not coming. This threat is here. Yes. It's in all our countries. And when they drive a car into a crowd, they're not checking whether you're Muslim, whether you're Catholic, whether you're Jewish. They don't care. They want to kill and destroy what we love. So this fight is, yes, I will stand with my Jewish and my Israeli brothers and sisters every day for the rest of my life, but I don't just stand for them. I stand for all of us who care about what matters.
That's so important, because a lot of people don't realize that the fight is here. It's ever present. It's all over. We've been to Australia twice. It's one of the places in the world, I think, that you feel that everyone gets along the most. But Australia is no less immune from this evil extremism. And you've seen it up front and close in your own communities there firsthand. So that's an important message. And we have this, I didn't know we were even going to go in this direction, but we have this saying during the Passover Seder when we're singing about all the miracles that God does for us in the redemption from slavery, bringing us back into the land. We say Dayenu, that if he had only brought us out of Egypt and not brought us into land, Dayenu, that would have been enough. And what you're saying is one of these Dayenu moments, because people have to realize that, in fact, it's all of us. It's all of these things.
Absolutely.
That add up. I'm curious, Aaron, to what degree does your faith play a role in not just standing with Israel and the Jewish people, but in your views about the world?
It's a great question. And you know, I'm always brutally honest, much to my detriment, I think, sometimes. But I was born and raised Catholic. I would consider myself Christian, but I feel like in my early to mid-20s, I moved away from the church itself a fair bit. I have a little brother who is gay, and I looked at that organization as an organization. Oh, and this is my apologies. I don't know how to turn this off, so my apologies. I looked at that organization as an organization that made my brother feel less than he deserved or not feel good enough. And that to me was something I found very difficult. And I think I then maybe moved into more of a spiritual place. Now I feel like I'm moving back a little bit more. I feel like as I get a little bit older, and particularly given what's occurred over the last 18 months, going to the Western Wall, you know, I wrote a note to put in the wall, and I just lost every job that I'd had. My whole world had basically blown up. And I mean, I could have written a list this long of things, because people said you write things that you want from God. I'm like, well, where do I start? And I actually sat there outside before going in. And I don't know what it was, whether it was being in the Holy Land, whether something came over me so powerfully. And I just wrote, thank you. And I genuinely, despite everything blowing up, despite losing dad to cancer, despite losing all my jobs, my relationship, like so much had blown up, but I felt this immense sense of gratitude, and I felt so blessed. And I don't know what to put that down to other than this sense and feeling and returning to some kind of faith. And I look now at the church, and it's not even necessarily the church. The church doesn't define Christianity or Catholicism, and there are definite benefits to the church, absolutely. But I feel like I'm moving back towards Christianity and back towards the faith that I was born into. But it's been a journey. I think it's been a journey, and there are parts of it, I think, like in any religion, where things that happen, like October 7, and I think, how could any God allow that to happen? But then as you get older, you start to understand that's a far too simplistic way to look at it. So I feel as I get older, I'm leaning more towards God. And I feel like I would rather think about my beautiful dad up in heaven than in anywhere else. And I would rather think about other people I've lost, you know, the Bebus babies in heaven, somewhere beautiful and loved and safe and peaceful, than anywhere else. So yeah, it's something I'm moving back towards. But in terms of it playing a major role. I guess the values, the foundation of Christianity, I was raised so heavily within that. And that is something that I always lived my life very proudly by those, not rules, but guidelines. And it's interesting. I look at things that are written about me in the media that have been for 20 years or something like that, and I could handle anything they would write about me that would be silly or untrue or made up. But when it was to my character, when it was to my integrity, when it was to anything to question a part of me about whether or not I was a good person or lived a life that I wanted mum and dad to be proud of, that's when I would arc up. And I feel like that's another, I guess, reflection on how I was raised to value the things that I was raised to value.
And then after October 7th specifically, seeing something that was never more clear in terms of black and white and standing up for what's correct.
On October 7th, 2023, Israel and the Jewish people suffered a massacre and calamity of unprecedented proportion, the largest number of Jews killed in one day since the Holocaust. That this is even something that we even measure is harrowing. Since then, the Jewish people have never felt more alone, in Israel and around the world. It brings us back to when 6 million of us were murdered in the Holocaust, and few rose to protect us. However, those who did, the righteous among the nations, can never be forgotten. They serve as a beacon of light for us today and for future generations. Footsteps was born in the wake of this most recent calamity, to give you the opportunity to walk in the footsteps of the righteous among the nations, the righteous Gentiles. Footsteps is a boutique travel experience with a personal touch. You will experience stories of the righteous among the nations, their descendants, of the Jews they saved, and the generations that came from them. Through this, you'll be inspired to follow in their footsteps, to inspire new generations of righteous among the nations, especially today when so much of the world is embracing overt anti-Semitism. In a generation where standing up for Israel and the Jewish people is no longer something to be taken for granted, stories of the righteous among the nations call out to us, inspire us, and are models for today and for our next generations. Please join us and get more information at genesis123.co.
I don't see gray here. So many people talk to me. There is no context that would ever justify what occurred on October 7th. There is no complexity. There is no blurred line. There is no gray. It is black and white. It is good versus evil. And for the life of me, I can't understand how 99% of the population can't see that as clearly as I do.
Right. Well, that's why we're giving you a voice, and pray that will be magnified and amplified all over the world. You alluded to it in the long list, as you said it, of the long list, reams of paper you probably could have filled with a prayer for God at the Western Wall, but you simply wrote thank you, and that reminds me of what I always try in the last 20 months, and you'll relate to the biblical story of Moses sending out the spies to check out the land, and two of them came back with a positive report, and we remember their names, Joshua and Caleb, but 10 came back with a negative report, and we don't really remember their names. And for me, while we've been through so much, and I could create that same laundry list of all the traumas and stresses and problems that still exist here, I always try when I'm presenting to be one of the good spies, one of the people presenting a positive report, the blessings. And there have been so many blessings, so many miracles that have come out of this. And, you know, you and I, you lost your father more recently. Me, it's, wow, gosh, 28, 29 years. I always think that I would rather have him and be less sensitive to the loss of others, but even out of my father's death as a very young man, and I was very young, we become more sensitive. And the same thing is that I'm so much more appreciative of all the positives, but we can't.
I love that you said that, and a couple of reactions to that. The first one, you mentioned your father, and I'm so sorry for your loss so young. I was
also cancer.
It's such an evil, isn't it? And gosh, if we could, I mean, every cent of every dollar should be put towards finding cures for that as much as we can, because it does not discriminate, does it? But I'm exactly the same as you, I feel. And I wasn't always this way, but I did a year of very intense therapy. When my dad was dying, I'd never seen a psychologist, spoken to anyone about my feelings. And I sent this lady I'd seen on the television, a psychologist, saying, you know, I don't know how to survive losing my dad. And dad was in hospital at the time, you know, towards the end. And after about 5 minutes of this conversation with her, our first session, she said, oh, girl, you need a whole hell of a lot more help than just your daddy. And I was like, oh, thanks, Scoop. So she actually managed to, I feel like it was a gift from dad, but changed my entire mentality. And I now, the pain of losing dad is no less acute than it was the day he died. But what a privilege to feel so much pain at his loss. Well, I look at this as such a, if I felt less pain, it would mean he was less. He was less to me. He wasn't as phenomenal. And so anytime I feel like this stab of something amazing happening, me wanting to call him or something awful, and me, I think, God, that is such a privilege to hurt so much that he's not here. And I flipped the entire narrative around. And it's the same as when I was in Israel. I went in December. It was my first trip. And so, you know, however long after October 7, and we went to all the kibbutz where the most horrific atrocities occurred. I stood in a room where three beautiful kids, including two my daughter's age twins, were burnt alive, having watched their parents be shot. I watched the raw vision every second of October 7. I saw the faces of these sadistic, evil, murderous pieces of that derive joy from the suffering of dads trying to stop their kids from being killed. And you see the face of it's unbearable. But when I went to visit the kibbutz after watching this vision, there was a woman tending to roses in the front of one of them. And I went up to her and I gave her a hug and I said, is this your place? And she said, no. I said, oh, is it your family? She said, no, this woman is still hostage in Gaza, but I want her to come home and have roses. I've never met her. I want her flowers to be loved. I then walked to another section where all the buildings were destroyed. The homes were destroyed. And there was about 20 fit, 30, 40 something blokes rebuilding. All their rebuilding, just, you know, working so incredibly hard. And one of them came over and he said, you know, nice to meet you. And I said, oh, is this your parents' place? Where, you know, are you guys from here? Are you rebuilding? And this other guy yelled out, he's one of the best architects in America. He does not know a soul. He gave up work for a year to come here and help. He just wanted to help. And then he kept pointing at all the, so is Joey, so is Tom. And they're all just going, yeah, we don't know anyone. Two of them had never been to Israel, not even Jewish, and they had left work for a year to come and help rebuild. That to me is that, you know, it was devastation there, and I could have walked away only thinking of the horror. But I walked away thinking, who are these incredible people that just see hope and life and love despite what's gone on? And I felt so optimistic, you know, and that's, most of them were Jewish, and that's, I look at your people and I think you're just insanely strong and resilient and inspirational.
Right. But if you ask most of us, I think we'd probably go back to October 6th and never had the opportunity for all of these remarkable miracles and blessings that have come and kept in our bubble without this. But the fact is, and you alluded to it so perfectly, I don't remember the exact phrase, but I'm going to borrow that in terms of your father. If your father didn't deserve the grief and the loss that you experience still and always will, then he wouldn't have been as amazing. And the same thing is that we have to balance it.
That up. Yeah.
So let me segue, because you alluded to that list again, and you've been the victim of really gross threats. I'd love if you would discuss some of those, but also then in the context of what we were just discussing, would you have done something different? Would you have done something different that would have immunized yourself from all of those?
Look, I'm a mom, and my number one job in the world is to protect my child and keep her safe. So to say that this hasn't been excruciating at times would be lying to you. But that does not mean for a second that I have regretted any of it, and I haven't. And I'm very lucky in that her father, we separated 3 years ago. He's incredibly supportive of what I do. He understands what I do. He has very legitimate concerns, as do I, which we manage in the best way that we can. The threats are horrific in that they are very specific. They involve her a lot. They are what security and police forces would describe as legitimate a lot of the time, which is terrifying. But to allow people like that to win is something that just won't happen on my watch. And I was so lucky to have Dad and to watch Dad. And Dad was a phenomenal human being, incredibly brave. He went to Iraq for a year. He ran the war there for the US and Allied forces, the first Australian general to run the entire war. General Petraeus put him in as chief of operations, and he ran the Battle of Fallujah, the first democratic election in decades in that country. And his moral compass was unlike any other. And he was someone I watched from a very young age, clearly always doing what was right, even when it was immensely difficult. And I listened to stories. I listened to him talk about when they were looking at targets and terrorists, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, people he was trying to eliminate, not just for the Western world, but for the people there as well who deserve to live free of that terror. And he would say, and there's a childcare centre here, and there's this here, and there's, you know, we've got to be proportionate, we've got to do this. So we wait till after hours, and then we know that he's get, you know, the process they go through to minimise civilian casualties, to do what is right, to follow the rules of war. And he used to always, I'd say to him, but Dad, they don't. How do you fight a war against terrorists who don't follow any rules when you guys have to? And when I was younger, I didn't understand. It didn't sound fair. And he would say, well, what are we fighting for? If we lower ourselves to who they are and what they do, what are we fighting to protect? What values, what society are we fighting to protect? And it wasn't until I was much older that I understood that. And even when he got home from, you know, from Iraq, they called him a war criminal. They protested against him. And I remember him looking at me one day when there was a big protest organized at University of Sydney, because, I mean, they were so stupid. They thought, oh, he was at war criminal, rather than, gosh, how lucky are we that there are people brave enough, strong enough, disciplined enough, courageous enough to go to war to keep people like us safe. No, they yes. called him a war criminal. And he looked at me and he said, you're nobody till they protest against you, darling. And we had a laugh, and I kind of, 2 days later, I went into his study at home, and one of the placards that they were holding, he'd got laminated, he put up on his wall. And I think I always think about that. He was cheeky like that. And the beauty of Dad was that he knew so clearly within himself what he stood for, and he knew what the difference between right and wrong. His moral compass, as I said, was superb. Nobody else could ever challenge that. If he knew that he was in the right, then there was absolutely nothing that any of them could say or do that could convince him otherwise, even if it was difficult. And he now holds a record for the most voted individual politician in Australian history. Wow. So, that's insane. He was a major general, then went into politics, and the Australian public loved him so much because he was no nonsense. He was a 6'6", big, powerful major general. But the smartest, the kindest, the most sensible, he would call a spade a spade. He cared deeply about people. And so more Australians voted for him individually than anyone else in the history of our politics. So he was a special human being. So I attribute a lot of my ability to overcome things that are difficult and that are hard because he did. And he did it with so much grace and with a smile and a laugh, yeah.
I didn't know that we were going to go this direction, but I love how much your father is coming up in the conversation because yes. he's such a part of you. And so I don't forget, let me articulate that. I just pray that, you know, he's also living on in you, and your voice is that reflection of him. And I pray that that will always be the case, not just because of what you're doing, why we're having this conversation, but also even if people never know of him, that's a light that continues to shine through you.
I think a lot of, and it, I still get very emotional thinking sure. of him because I love him so much, but they say in some cultures you die twice, once when you take your final breath and the second time when people stop saying your name. So I feel like I use every opportunity possible to say his name, A, because it's relevant and he's a big part of who I am and why I do what I do, and B, because I promised him when he died and took his last breath that he would never yes. die twice. So
what was your father's name? You haven't said your father's name.
Jim Mullen. Jim Mullen.
Okay. Yeah. We will continue to say his name as well.
Bless you. Karen,
I know you have a hard stop. It's another one of the blessings.
All the calls.
That's
I'm
okay.
I'm not popular. It's all my family trying to FaceTime, even though she's at her dad's and I'm about to go.
You're going to go and have a great celebration.
No one calls me normally.
With your 7-year-old daughter, and that's wonderful. Yes. But I have two more questions.
Please.
I want to wrap up. we've used the analogy of being a modern righteous Gentile coming from the Holocaust. And I don't know to what extent you are imbued with Holocaust history, but what one thing that always shocks me is that while here from the blessing side, there are tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of Jews alive today who owe their lives to the people who were saved by Gentiles, mostly Christian, throughout Europe, and they were mostly European. But what always shocks me is in the whole continent, there were fewer than 27,000 people who stood up to save lives. Now, we know what the risk was. If they even perceived that you were saving Jews or helping Jews, you would be shot. You would be executed. No trial, no nothing. So my question to you is, what's holding people back now? What's muting their voices now that people are afraid of? I know that you've said in other interviews that you do get a lot of quiet support, and you refer to yourself as part of a silent majority, and that may be true. But why are they silent? Why is it still a tip of an iceberg, and we don't see the rest of it?
It's a really great question, and it's one I haven't been asked in that framing, and it's gotten me thinking. I've never thought about it like that in regards to the severity of what was at stake back then in terms of losing your life to what now would be considered a far less severe consequence for speaking up. But the way I would answer that, I think, and I remember learning about the Holocaust at school, and even as a very young person, the thing that never left my mind was trying to understand how people watched on. I think that for me, even as a young girl, was something I could not comprehend, was how so many people did nothing. And yes, I understood the threat they were under and all these different things, but that was the one thing that stayed in my mind for many, many years. Why enough that other people don't speak out? I feel like it's relative. And I use this example. I remember when I was 18, 19, and a girlfriend of mine was 16, and she lost her mum to cancer. Her name was Heather. And she was sobbing hysterically sitting next to me on the stairs. And another of her friends who was also 15, 16 came over, and she'd just broken up with her boyfriend. And she sat down and she was sobbing hysterically, and both were sobbing and both as hysterically and as traumatized. And I remember saying to Heather after the other friend left, after we'd comforted her, like, are you angry? Like, you know, you just lost your mum and she's here, you know, she just broke up with her boyfriend. And I remember Heather saying to me, it's a 16-year-old who just lost her mum. It's all relative. That's the most awful thing that she can imagine happening to her now, or that has happened to her. So that's her bar, and this is the worst day of her life. I don't judge. And I kind of, and that has stayed with me. And I look at this now and I think, for people in Australia particularly, and I use this saying and I'm not being specific to anyone, we are fat, dumb, and happy. We are so privileged. We, for the most part, do not know we are alive. We have the most privileged existence in the world. So for us, we're not afraid, of course, of being killed for our views here. That wouldn't even enter our minds. But to be persecuted by others, to be left out socially.
Wow, great analogy.
That's what I think it is. Yeah, so as in, they might say, oh, no, I'm not going to be killed, but I don't want to be, you know, people to make me a pariah at work, or I don't want to stir the pot, or I don't want, you know, people not to talk to me or to think. So I feel like in some ways they would fear that just as much as people back then may have feared being shot, you know, because it's the worst case for them is far less severe. And that could be completely wrong. And no one, I love that you asked me that, because I'm going to think about it more now, because I'd never thought about that. But maybe that's the thing that we're so blessed and lucky, and in much of the, and this is the issue. Why can a feminist here in Australia try and get someone sacked from a workplace because he complimented a woman's dress, and the next day march with a Hamas flag calling for intifada? You know, how does she in her mind somehow, you know, in her mind justify that she can march for Palestinians, but you can't compliment a woman's dress at work? She can march for a terrorist, for Hamas, that slaughter women. And I feel like, of course she can, because there's no consequences for her. You know, it's a complex but a great question, and one that I will ponder now for the rest of the night.
This year, you can join Christian leaders from around the world who are lining up to participate in Root and Branch, the newest hands-on, meaningful, and incredibly tangible way for Christians to make a personal connection to Israel, the Israeli people, and to be a blessing to the people and nation which is still suffering from the trauma of a horrific terrorist attack and war. Root and Branch offers unique comfort and a vision of peace with tangible material benefits to Israelis who have suffered the trauma of war, specifically in and around the Gaza border area. Root and Branch is a unique agricultural pilgrimage. You will harvest wild olive trees in communities along the Gaza border that were devastated by the October 7, 2023 terrorist attack and massacre. In these communities and elsewhere, we will plant deep and lasting roots among Israelis of all backgrounds, making Root and Branch all the more innovative. Since the war began, more than $50 million in crops have been saved by volunteers. Root and Branch is the first such initiative to harvest olives. Proceeds from the olive oil that's being made will directly benefit these devastated communities, making Root and Branch a critical and significant project to bless Israel economically and spiritually in multiple ways. Root and Branch is a partnership between the Genesis 123 Foundation and NewPersia.org. For information, videos, and media about the experience, dates, pricing, and how you can register, please visit rootandbranchisrael.com.
Well, then we will, God willing, continue this.
Yes.
I'd love to know your thoughts, but your answer was terrific. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Really, yeah, very, very, very. Maybe what part of the answer also, the follow-up to that, is that voices like you need to burst those the bubbles of those people, that they see that there is more. And
well, and this is it's a great point in that you've got your section of society who are malicious, anti-Semitic, terrorist loving. You don't want them. You write them off. You'll never get them. You don't want them. It's that mainstream middle group who are getting snippets of a narrative that is skewed, that is false, that is slanted, and they get it from mainstream media in Australia, the ABC. Day 500 and something of Israel's illegal invasion of Gaza. Now, if you're a 45-year-old single mom in Western Sydney, who doesn't have the luxury of going home and immersing herself in this conflict. It feels far away from her. She's trying to figure out how to pay the bills, how to pay school fees. She's exhausted. She hears that as she gets out of the car with five bags of shopping and she thinks, oh, those awful Israelis, that illegal invasion. She's watching, you know, I was watching commercial TV and the opening of the coverage of the hostage slash prisoner exchange was a Palestinian prisoner on the shoulders of a man. And the reporter's narration over the top was, a family reunion, decades in the making. And then, and his mum sobbing. And then the mum's there crying. And I'm going, he blew up a bus that killed six kids. But you don't even say that. So if you're watching at home as an everyday Australian who cares about people but is not particularly invested in this conflict because it doesn't feel like it affects me personally, you go, oh, God, that's so beautiful. Oh, God, that poor mum, like without a... You know, that is, so that's what we're dealing with, sophisticated stuff that might, I mean, it was an emotional family reunion. Absolutely. It's not a lie. But what they omit to tell you is why he was in prison. And then we get like a throwaway, oh, and here are the Israeli hostages home next. So if you're just watching it, not me or you who live this day in, day out, you go, oh, God, that's, you know, and then you move on with your day. So I feel like that, a lot of people, that shapes their narrative. That's amazing. That's the highest rating news program in our country. The number one program is the 6 p.m. news, and that was on the 6 p.m. news. Yeah. So you're right. Even those who understand it may fear speaking out, but there's probably a hell of a lot more of people who don't, or who think they understand, who understand what they understand, who don't know any better, and who think, why would I speak out for them? They're killing kids in Gaza. You know, that's the issue.
Right.
Whereas we all know Hamas is killing kids in Gaza, but that's what I'm trying to do in my work, is to not convince people to agree with me. I want to tell people what the actual reality is and then let them make up their mind. And I think the greatest email I've gotten from a bloke who worked down in the mines in Queensland, you know, not sophisticated, not into politics, not into geopolitics, foreign affairs, etc., sent me an email a little while back and said, Aaron, I've just watched one of your videos. I wanted to let you know, my values and my beliefs have not changed, but the side I now realize they align with has. And I just, that's me winning, right? So, like, I love you guys, but you agree with me. I am best used reaching out to people like that, where I can say, I care about kids in Gaza too. Let me explain why they are dying. Well, and once you show people,
You may have just answered the last question that I wanted to ask you, and I have to be the gatekeeper, so you go and get to celebrate the biggest blessing in your life.
She's a beautiful daughter, but she's psychotic. She's got her mother's fire as well.
No,
so
no, no, you go. But the last question I wanted to ask you, and maybe you just answered it, is what's the biggest impact you've had?
Well, to me, that, you know, the other story, and I'm so glad that you asked this as well. So that the reaching out to those who are not Jewish, not Israeli, but who are decent people who just don't understand, and not because they're dumb, not because they don't care, but because they're fed a very sophisticated narrative that is funded by we all know who, et cetera, et cetera. One of the other moments and interactions that just means so much to me, and because of my dad being in the army, when on my first trip to Israel, I did a big talk with a few thousand people. And right before I went inside, I was waiting outside doing some photos with people. This young man ran up to me and he pulled out of his pocket. Then he said, I couldn't get, you know, the tickets were all gone by the time I tried. I couldn't get a ticket, but I just drove hours to give you something and I'm going to get it for you. Give me one tick. I'm going to get this for you.
Okay. Show and tell. First show and tell on Inspiration from Zion.
Just because this is very special to me, and it when things feel a little bit hard.
Oh, so excellent.
He said, this is the flag that I was wearing on my uniform on October 7 when he was sent into Gaza. And he said, you know, he lost a lot of friends, a lot of people on that awful day and then in Gaza after that. And he said, you know, it's hard enough going into war. It's scary enough going into war, but he said very soon we realized that, oh my gosh, the rest of the world think we are the evil ones. Like, how did this happen? We're fighting terrorists on behalf of Western civilization. And all of a sudden we started to see the public commentary and we thought we're actually here risking our lives fighting terrorism and they're calling us the bad guys. And he said that was so demoralizing. And he said his mum sent him one of my videos 2 or 3 weeks in. And he said it was the first time all the troops sat around. He said that they thought we're not alone and someone understands, someone who's not one of us understands. And he said for the next few months, every week they would watch my monologue at the start. And he wow. said, I can't explain to you how much that did for us. And so for me as the daughter of an army brat who had a father who went to war, the thought that I provided some comfort to your brave IDF soldiers just for me is enough. I mean, that was one experience that was incredibly special. And I carry this now in my handbag everywhere with me as a reminder of why, one of the reasons why I talk.
When you come here next and hope you will need, and maybe you'll join us for Shabbat, I have another little gift that you'll want to carry alongside that.
I'm so excited. Thank you. This is, it's so special. And again, I am deeply uncomfortable with gratitude and with thanks because it should be normal. It should be normal, but I understand that it's not and it means a lot. So thank you.
Thank you, Erin. I know you have to go and I'm celebrating with you. Please give your daughter a
bless
hug
you.
From me and all
I
of
will.
Us who appreciate you. And I look forward to seeing you again.
You are wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. And again, I'll reiterate that it's an honor and a privilege to stand with you and your people, and I will do so for the rest of my life. So thank you.
Thank you, Erin. God bless you. As we've done now for 4 years, everyone who follows the Genesis 123 Foundation program gets an opportunity for what we call a special gift from Jonathan's bookshelf. It used to be we were giving out other very important books here from Israel, about Israel. But for almost 2 years now, we have been offering a beautiful, magnificent copy of our book that we published, Israel the Miracle. We published it right before the war came out. It's a stunning coffee table book with 75 essays by Christian leaders from all over the world writing about why Israel is so significant. And it's a $75 retail value. So all we ask that you do is follow and like Inspiration from Zion. Here. And when you follow, like, comment, and or share, we pick one person each month to receive a free copy and we'll be in touch. So please do that. We're always grateful that this podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. If you're ever in the area, I always encourage people to stop in and thank them for helping meaningful conversations like this be possible. And special thanks again to the Coyne family for their meaningful friendship and sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all of the Genesis 123 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So please consider joining us to help continue build bridges and have dialogues like this. And it's my privilege as host and getting to know now my new friend, Aaron, that today's episode is sponsored in honor of the birthday, the same day of both of our daughters, 23 years apart, and in honor of and memory of her dear father, Jim, General Jim Mullen, whose memory we salute and who lives on in Erin and all of her amazing work. If you'd like to sponsor an episode in honor or memory of a loved one or a special occasion or your favorite righteous Gentile, and please do let us know who you think that is. Please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. We'd always love to hear your comments as part of a dialogue, especially comments relating to traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi programs. Please share this with others who will also find it of interest, and continue to join us right here as we bring you more meaningful conversations relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean mountains. God bless you.